And yeah, I mean, this is the year that China has been running away with the EV market hard, you know?
Yeah, they are, yeah, they are kicking ass. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs, a weekly news show about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, editor-in-chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, senior reporter at Inside EVs. We're off for the holidays again this week, so instead of talking about the news, we're going to break down the biggest stories of 2024 in the EV space. And looking back at the past year, it was ridiculously packed, right, Patrick?
Yeah, in the electric vehicle space, you basically cram like 5 years of normal car news into like 2 days, and it's exhausting. You know, everyone on staff had a mental breakdown, which we're in the throes of right now. But we're getting some rest over the holidays, and we're you know, recharging our own batteries. Little EV pun for you there.
Very nice.
You know, thank you. I'm proud of it. And getting ready for what's going to be an even busier 2025. So we will recap some of the biggest stories that we covered this year, what we thought of them, and look at where we're going next year.
Yeah, but just to start things off, we won't get into this. We'll get into some bigger stories in the actual show. But what do you think, Patrick? What was your favorite EV that you drove this year? I think you drove. You can flip it back on me after, but I think you drove more different cars than I did. If you could narrow it down to one or two, like what were your favorites?
I tell you, I think, you know, what they say, like when you're taking a test, like the first answer that comes to your head is usually the right one. So I think it was the Porsche Taycan that I drove earlier this year in California. And I did a range test for that. So it was like, I want all of our listeners to know the sacrifices that I make personally for this publication, this podcast. And so that was a range test in this unbelievably powerful Taycan. And I was going as slowly and steadily as I possibly could. I wasn't breaking the law. I wasn't tearing ass on an LA freeway, even though I wanted to. But I got well over 300 miles of range out of that high performance EV. And I'm dying to drive it again and really open up and see what a Taycan can do. Like the new one is excellent. If I had, you know, 120 grand to burn a car, it'd probably be that. But that's my answer. What about you, Tim? What was your favorite this year?
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that you would pick like something attainable for people, so that we're not just both picking like crazy expensive like supercars.
We did a whole awards about attainable cars. Go buy the Equinox EV. It's great. It's fun.
That's true. Know? That's true. But we can't say it's like our favorite car we've ever, you know, driven this year. But yeah, for me, I got the opportunity to drive the Lucid Air Sapphire, which is basically like the Lucid Air is already like awesome kind of in any trim. The Sapphire is their top of the line. Like it has 1,234 horsepower, 1, 2, 3, 4, which is just like fun and an absolutely outrageous amount. That is really fun. It's basically like a track car, you know, kind of disguised as a Lucid Air. And that thing was really fun. I'm no like performance driver, but I did my best, kind of like, you know, carving around some of the mountain roads out in the Bay Area where I live, and that thing was awesome. It was like extremely stiff and fun around corners, and then you turn it into its like comfort mode, and it just like very smoothly, like it does not feel then like it's supposed to be this track oriented sports car. It was kind of wild how its character changed. But yeah, that thing's crazy. It's also $250,000, so not going to buy that anytime soon.
Acquiring one has not been on our collective radars yet for some reason, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. We'll get there. Once my crypto investments pay off, once I learn what crypto is and how to make money off of it, which I hope to do in 2025. And we're going to talk about the future in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This episode of Inside EV's Plugged In podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tires. E-Range EV Tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with low rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. go to erangetires.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tires.com to find your EV's next set of tires.
All right, Tim, what's first on our list if we're going to be recapping the big stuff from last year? Should we look at just sales overall for electric vehicles and the state of the market? Like, what are we thinking there?
Yeah, it's almost like you're reading the exact same outline that I am. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. State of the... Wow. It's like we're sisters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should start with the state of the market and kind of how the EV market progresses here, because it's been a rocky year. It's been probably the rockiest year of the EV transition, especially like in its kind of modern era. You know, we've seen lots of automakers either pulling back their investments or pushing out different products, or, you know, car companies that said they were going to go all electric by a certain date saying, actually, never mind, you know, we're going to push that out a little bit farther. But despite all of that, the EV market has grown this year, and sales are going to be up over what they were last year. So they're expected to hit 1.3 million EV sales this year in the U.S., up from 1.2 million last year. So, you know, despite all the kind of negative headlines, things are looking up. And in December, it looks like EVs are going to make up 9% of the U.S. car market, which is a record high. Up from under 8% last year. So everything's moving in the right direction, even if it's like a little bit slower than some of these automakers and the industry thought.
And it is possible with December sales, we could end at 10%, which is that's a real landmark figure, right? I mean, I think that we have to wait till all this data's in. We may not see it for a little bit, but like it could pull a better surprise than we expected. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know I don't know if we can hit 10%, but like in general, it's going to be a higher market share than basically, you know, the market share of EVs is increasing steadily, like despite all the kind of negative news. And a big part of that, I think, is, and you can elaborate on this more, but, you know, we've seen a bunch of really great EVs come out this year, like new products that are filling holes in the market, that are doing really well, that people really like. You know, the Chevy Equinox EV is this affordable, small, crossover with a ton of range, over 300 miles.
Our breakthrough of the year award. Yeah.
Exactly. Our breakthrough EV of the year for that exact reason. And there's the Chevy Blazer, the Cadillac Lyriq, the Kia EV9, the Honda Prologue. These are all EVs that debuted this year or toward the end of last year. And, you know, that have been really, I think driving sales.
Yeah, one big part of that, and I took advantage of this personally, was what's called the leasing loophole. You know, we have $7,500 EV tax credits, but they're pretty restrictive because they only apply to cars and batteries built in the United States. And so a very small list of EVs qualifies for that. Not all of that list even qualifies for the full amount. That system could completely go away next year. You know, incoming President Trump has said he wants to get rid of that. But there's this loophole where if you lease any EV, you still get that $7,500 discounted when you acquire. And I got myself a leased Kia EV6 that way this year. And that car's made it to South Korea. But thanks to the leasing loophole, I got a sweet deal on it. So a lot of people took advantage of that to lease these cars. And, you know, in some ways it's smart. Like I don't want to see like a bazillion EVs piling up on lots in like 2 or 3 years, but like this technology moves so quickly that like maybe try one out for 2 or 3 years is kind of the way to best experience it, and then you can figure something out from there, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think part of it's the loophole, the fact that it's actually, you know, a leased EV counts as a commercial purchase, and so the company that's leasing you the EV can take that $7,500 credit, and then they can pass that on to the end consumer. And so that's kind of what the loophole is. The other reason, like you say, leasing has been so popular is just that I think there are people who want to dip their toes in the water and like they're not totally sure and they, you know, want to try it out, or they're, hedging to see if technology improves enough that, you know, maybe in 3 years, like they'll want something with more range or faster charging or whatever. Yeah, I mean, just like to put a stat to it, EV leasing has grown to about almost 50% by the latest stats that I saw, almost 50% of EV purchases are now leased, which is way higher than the rest of the car market. And it's way higher than it was before this loophole or this new tax credit scheme came into play. And yeah, I think another thing that's been improving and that has been helping, I think, to drive sales is just the charging infrastructure. Like, this has been one of those things that historically and to this day, it's one of the things that worries potential EV buyers the most. It's like, where the hell, if I'm on a road trip, where am I going to charge this thing? How fast is it going to take?
Plug in?
Am I going to find one? Is it going to be broken? All of that. And all that is still an issue, but it's been improving really fast. And so this year, the U.S. surpassed 200,000, basically level 2 and level 3 charging ports. Basically, slightly slower charging ports are the level 2, and then DC fast chargers are level 3. So now we have a little over 200,000 of those combined, and that's an addition of 30,000 this year.
It's remarkable growth. I mean, that's really impressive. And a lot of that was federal funding that then went to the states, and then the states dole them out to charging companies. And, you know, like you said, these fast charging stations, they take a while to install because you have these complicated issues with permits and bringing a lot of electricity to all these different sites. But, like, it is getting better. I feel like every time I take a road trip in a car, in a familiar place, I see more charging options along the way. Like, it is so much easier to do this than it was a year ago, than 2 years ago, even like where I live in rural upstate New York. So like, progress is being made all the time there. That's pretty great to see. Another big deal this year that we got to cover is the pivot to Tesla's North American charging standard, or NACS plug. It's like, we were, for the longest time, there were kind of two types of fast charging plugs. It was the CCS for all EVs, and then Tesla's proprietary slimmer NACS plug for Teslas only. But, you know, all the automakers are like, you know, we're fed up with how bad Electrify America has been for us historically. They're getting a lot better too. And we're just going to, like, you know, make a deal with Tesla to open up their network and go to that plug. And if this is like, you know, beta versus VHS, or like Blu-ray versus HD DVD, then like, the Tesla format won, and it looks like everything's sort of going in that direction, isn't it, Tim?
Yeah, for sure. And it's you know, it's important to mention that basically, historically, Tesla superchargers are the best and the most available types of DC fast chargers out there, but they were always only for Teslas. And now that's changing because the Tesla has made these deals with many automakers, most automakers. And so, you know, slowly but steadily, these car companies are allowing their customers to gain access to superchargers through either adapters at first that, you know, you plug in, that let you basically convert the existing standard to the Tesla standard. And then we're starting to see car companies actually release vehicles with the Tesla type of port just built in natively. And so this is a huge deal. And currently, Ford, Rivian, GM, Volvo, Polestar, and Nissan are the brands that you can buy one of their EVs and you can charge on thousands of these Tesla superchargers. So that's a huge deal. And it's only going to, that and the charging infrastructure in general is kind of only going to accelerate from here.
Yeah. And then these new, like, Hyundai and Kia EVs coming out soon, those are going to have a native Tesla plug from the factory. Mm-hmm. I think they're the first brand, the Koreans are the first brand to come out with that, like, Tesla plug built in. Like, this is the future right here. So a lot of good options coming your way. And I think that's going to be a huge game changer for charging access and road trips and everything else. And it's not that Hyundai's a good way to segue into, like,
yeah, there you go.
Who's yeah, there you go. Master those transitions. Like, who was up and who was down in 2024? Because this was, like you said, a year of uneven sales, but there were clearly some winners and losers in this space this past year. And we're, as we saw that, you know, pivoting to batteries and software, not everybody's going to, like, kick ass at this and do great. So who in your mind, like, did really well in the EV space this year, Tim?
Yeah, and I want to hear yours too, but I think the top ones are GM and Hyundai. You know, GM had this kind of incredible pivot from or like resurrection. I don't know what you'd call it. Like last year, they were really struggling with their EVs. They weren't able to produce them in the way that they had hoped. They were having issues with battery production. They were having issues with software, and that was really hampering their efforts. And then come 2024, like they're pretty much off to the races. You know, they've launched a bunch of vehicles. They are, many of them are selling pretty well. Like some of those that I mentioned, the Cadillac Lyriq, the Chevy Blazer, the Equinox EV, this really affordable, like kind of never before seen affordable, really cool EV. The Honda Prologue is even, you know, it's a GM underneath.
It sort of counts, so it's doing really well. Yeah.
Like they've had this really amazing kind of turnaround, and then contrast them with, you know, Ford or something, which has two EVs on the market and no plans for many more in you know, until 2027 or something. GM is doing very well. I think Hyundai is definitely on your list. You wanna elaborate a little bit on Hyundai and how they've been doing?
Yeah, I don't think I'm too biased just because I own one of the cars, but like I've been consistently impressed with like the Hyundai Kia Genesis EVs over the last few years, which is like why I spent my own money on one. But like they're doing really well, and they or GM are going to finish number two to Tesla this year, which is no easy feat. And one or both of them will have sold 100,000 EVs for the first time ever in America, making them the second company in the United States to ever do that. ever. So like, you know, the Koreans push with technology and making like crazy fast charging and great range and great style, it's paying off. And like those cars are going to be built in America more and more to qualify for whatever tax credits might survive under Trump, and they'll have the Tesla plug built in. So like those are really world class. It's good to see that that conglomerate do well. I will say, like you mentioned Ford a second ago, and like, man, that's been a disappointment to watch this year, to be honest, because like Ford was such a pioneer in the EV space. You know, CEO Jim Farley, who I actually really like, has been out there like, look, this is the future, and if we don't get ahead of it, we're going to get left behind or destroyed. They come out with a Lightning early on, the F-150 Lightning, you know, which was for a time America's best-selling electric truck. You had the Mustang Mach-E, which was for a long time like the top-selling EV behind the Tesla Model Y and the Tesla Model 3. You know, they opened up the supercharger network. They were the first to kick that off, but they're getting crushed by battery costs and they're getting crushed by financial losses. And like at Ford, they break out the financial results of their EV division separately from, the gas cars and gas trucks. And the idea was, oh, we're going to be viewed like a tech company like Tesla was. And it, you know, we have Tesla mine's chiming on in the background right now. The rented Tesla I'm recording this from, it says hi.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm not Ford.
Oh, hey, buddy. Yeah. They kind of split out their financial results. Like, oh, this will allow us to be valued like a tech company. And the opposite happened. I actually feel bad for Ford because investors just keep looking at, look how much money you're wasting on EVs. Like, do more truck profits. And it's getting hard for them as sales slump and as losses mount to keep investing in EVs. So they canceled that three-row electric SUV. They're pushing other stuff back, and I know they're not going to give up this space. Like I've talked to people, the company, who have insisted like there's more to come from Ford, but it's going to come in the back half of this decade. And now the question is like, all right, this stuff heats up. Are you going to be competitive then, or is your timing going to be just right? So, big gamble for Ford, and we'll see if it works. Any other ones you put in more of the ending the year on a rough note, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about it here before. You know, some of the big European companies, Volkswagen, Stellantis, have both had their share of struggles. Nissan is, you know, in financial ruin and is potentially going to get this bailout from Honda in the form of a merger. So not everybody's doing great. And then one other that I would point out is Fisker, which we've done a lot. We did a lot of reporting on Fisker this year, and that was a really interesting story, a really tragic story in a lot of ways, because, you know, this was one of those EV startups that kind of came up around the same time as Rivian and Lucid. It went public in through a SPAC like some of these other EV startups did. And it actually got to the point of, you know, selling EVs and actually selling cars to customers. And then everything kind of came crashing down. they had issues with the cars. They eventually went bankrupt this year around summertime. It's a casual. It's one of the kind of big casualties of this EV boom is like not all these startups are going to make it. And Fisker was kind of this unique case where people actually bought the cars and then it went bankrupt. They didn't go bankrupt in the process of trying to ramp up. It's tragic in that there's a lot of people out there with these vehicles and no company to support them. So we're going to keep an eye on that for sure, because these owners are doing interesting things. But yeah, Fisker certainly started and ended the year on a tough note.
So, all right, RIP. Yeah, you had some great stories about like how, and this is going to be a trend we're all going to have to watch in the coming decades, is how like when a software powered car company shuts down, like who is responsible for keeping those cars running long term? And now it's like a group of owners is stepping up with a little bit of help from a company that's acquired a lot of Fisker's assets. But that's a fascinating story. If you know, it's like there's no longer long-term support for like your old video game console or something, but in this case it's something you paid $80,000 for and like need to get to work on time. So that's gonna be fascinating to watch. I'll also add that, like,
yeah,
we wrote a story about this too, but like a lot of people like, oh, in another sign of EV weakness, Fisker went out of business. It's like, no, Fisker's problem was quality delays, some, you know, real financial hijinks within that company. Like there were a lot of problems that were not just because like EV sales are up and down. A lot of problems. But I do think that it's tougher to be a startup than ever. You know, it's I never personally understood what the value proposition for buying a Fisker was versus a Tesla or a Hyundai Ioniq 5 or waiting for like an Audi Q6 e-tron or something. Like I never quite got why you'd roll the dice on such a new and unproven product that wasn't like far enough along like Rivian or Lucid. So tough environment out there, you know?
Yeah, no, agreed. I think that was part of the problem. You know, it wasn't like this, like Rivian had this outdoorsy thing. They were like, we're going to make these rugged SUVs and trucks, and Lucid has this edge of being, you know, really luxurious and really high tech, and Fisker didn't really have a clear edge. And that may have been part of it, but it's rough to see, especially for all the people who invested in that company and bought its cars. I think before we move on, I don't know if you have any more winners and losers that you want to talk about, but I think we should mention, you know, and if you haven't, you should tune into last week's episode where we talked to Kevin Williams about the Chinese EV market and the Chinese EV makers. But
yeah,
I put them in the winner category here. You know, this was kind of the year that Chinese EV companies, the Chinese EV industry, really put the world on notice. Like regular people I talk to in my personal life are like, hey, have you heard about these Chinese, like, have you driven any of these? Like, I've heard they're really cheap and really good and really high tech. And I mean, this is the year that China has been running away with the EV market hard, you know?
Yeah, they are kicking ass in Europe. They're kicking the crap out of the, you know, the homegrown automakers in the European countries. They're doing the same thing to BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen, Ford, GM in China, which was their biggest and most important, most profitable market. Now it's like, oh yeah, we're just not making money like we used to at all in China anymore. They're going to find some way into the U.S., I think is inevitable, which I want to talk about later. But that market's not been without its losers, too. As Kevin talked about on our last episode, it's like there are a lot of brands that just are not, you know, they're sort of dying out in that survival of the fittest moment in China. There's all these brands that are competing for the same buyers. Like, not everyone's going to survive. They're going to consolidate. So they have their share of losers, too. And they're not invincible, but like, they showed the world this year that they're a force to be reckoned with. I think if China wasn't hammering like Nissan so hard, like they wouldn't be talking about merging with Honda right now. But so like expect more upsets from that country probably forever, I think, from now on. So
yeah, and remember, like, you know, we talked about how in the US we're close-ish to hitting this milestone of 10% EV sales. Like we're gonna end the year in December around maybe 9%. China this year hit 50% EV sales.
Five, and that's, zero. That's,
Yeah, that's EV plus plug-in hybrid. But that's a huge milestone. And, you know, I mean, apart from like, I don't know, Norway or something, like the Western world is not close to that. The US is nowhere close to that. So they're basically, you know, 5 or 10 years ahead of us. And that's become increasingly apparent in 2024.
And you'll probably notice we haven't mentioned much about the biggest maker of EVs yet, which is Tesla, because the car I'm currently sitting in, amazingly, because we had to talk about that as its own thing, because you called this Tesla's weirdest year yet when you wrote up our guide to this episode. Like, why? That's it. For that company, that's saying something, because like, love or hate Tesla, you know, there's a lot of drama always from them. So if this is their weirdest year yet, like what made you think that, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, for the longest time, it was kind of all up and to the right for Tesla. You know, they had the EV market to themselves, especially in the US and pretty much globally. People would just buy as many cars as they would make. And, you know, they came out with the Model 3 and then the Model Y, these like, you know, very popular, good value EVs. And they just ran away with everything for years. And now they have more competition than ever. Their sales for the first time are really struggling to grow in the way that they were before. You saw that in a few quarters this year where their sales were actually down year over year. Yet to be seen whether they make 2024 an up year as a whole. They may be down this year. You know, so basically, yeah, I mean, their core business is struggling. And at the same time, the weird part of it is that Elon Musk, like, doesn't seem to care that much. You know, he's shown that he's increasingly kind of bored of just like selling EVs. And you always put it in a good, you're always like, you know, yeah, this guy doesn't want to, you know, he thinks it sounds boring to compete with freaking, you know, Nissan and Volkswagen. Like, he wants to go to Mars and do all this other stuff. And, that's been increasingly apparent this year, especially as, you know, their focus has really turned to robo-taxis. That's kind of been the big pivot, is like Tesla, you know, not really an EV company anymore. He wants you to see it as a autonomous vehicle company.
There is a theory. I don't know how true this is, but there's a theory that like Musk looked at like how fast that the Chinese automakers as a whole are accelerating. He's like, okay, on our best day, we're one still small company. We can't possibly fight that. So, like, the only way we're going to, like, propel, you know, the human race into space and become a trillion-dollar company like I dream of is to crack the code on autopilot and full self-driving and robo-taxis. And he just kind of doesn't see, for them, too much of a future for cars with steering wheels, which I think is a misfire. Like, like you said, that's still their core business. Like, selling cars is how they make money, among other things. But like, their best car, best selling EV in America and globally, the Model Y, is getting old. And the fact that they haven't really updated it much, but probably will next year. I don't know. I think that they should have been a little bit more on the ball with like electric cars. Like imagine that. As we've recorded this episode that you're listening to right now, this is the week that like Elon Musk kind of shut down almost the government, because he runs Congress now. And it's like, neat for one, I guess, that, you know, love when unelected billionaires can do that. But also, like, who the hell is running this company? Like, that's a question I have, you know, because they have kind of a rubber stamp board and he's off having adventures in space and in Washington with Trump. And I don't know, like, who's watching the ball at this company? But, you know, you also don't count them out ever. Like, I people have counted them out before and they've lost every time. So I don't think that company is ever to be underestimated. I will say that it does look great with the Cybertruck, though. Like, tons of hype early on, and even today we had a story on Inside EVs about how Cybertrucks are piling up on used car lots, not even at the Tesla stores to buy them. I'm talking used. So lots of people bought them, realize that they have to live with this vehicle perhaps every single day for X number of years. They finance release it and then said, no, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big issue here is that, like you said, the products are getting stale. That's one of the big reasons that Tesla sales aren't, you know, on the same upward trajectory that they used to be. And part of that is that the big new product that they released recently is the Cybertruck. Like they updated the Model 3, the one that you're sitting in, made it like look a little different, and they changed some stuff in it. But like that was the big new thing, and it costs starting cost of it's like over $100,000, and it's just not the kind of vehicle that can move the needle for a company that's trying to grow sales into, you know, from 1.8 million up into 2 and 3 million over the next couple of years. And so we're gonna have to really look at what is gonna drive Tesla's growth. And it may be that model, that refresh Model Y that's supposed to be coming. And it may be other cheaper models next year that Tesla has said are coming, but we have literally no details on what those are. We don't know if it's just gonna be a stripped out Model Y that's like, you know, they took $5,000 out of it somehow. But yeah, I mean, the thing that defined Tesla this year is the robotaxi stuff. Tesla unveiled finally its purpose-built robotaxi called the Cybercab at this event in LA earlier this year. They also unveiled the Robovan, which is like supposed to be an autonomous like bus. And we really don't know if that is going to pan out for this company. Like Tesla has bet everything on the fact that autonomous vehicles, and specifically its autonomous vehicles, are going to be the future. And like its technology is unproven. We just don't know if that's going to work out in any kind of major way. Like this is a very hard nut to crack.
That's something we're going to be covering a lot more next year too. And we don't need to waste a ton of time talking about like technologically where they're at versus Google's Waymo or anything, but it's a deeply unproven concept, but it's something that like Wall Street is very bullish on. At one point in December, they were, $1.5 trillion market cap based on the idea that one day they will be the company that delivers full self-driving and autonomy. And like, I don't know when that check is going to be due for Tesla, but it's getting there. So, but again, not to be underestimated. So we'll see what happens. We barely scratched the surface of what happened this past year because it was crazy. And sort of this little pithy 25-minute conversation makes it sound easier than it was. But let me tell you, it was exhausting to write about and do videos and record every day. But we did it. So, like, what are we looking at for next year, Tim? Like, what's on your radar for 2025? Like, what stories are we going to be watching in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we could end this episode with a little bit of a prediction. So mine is that, you know, one of the things that we're definitely going to be watching is how this new presidential administration treats EVs in the U.S. Things have the potential to change rather drastically if Trump and his Republican-led Congress are able to follow through on some of the promises that he's made. You know, he wants to... If he had his way, he would repeal major parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, if not all of it. This includes all sorts of incentives for EVs and EV manufacturing, including the $7,500 EV tax credit, which is a huge driver of EV sales. And which has pushed a lot of car companies to invest huge amounts of money in new factories across the U.S.
And billions of billions of dollars. Thousands of billions all over the U.S.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, we'll have to see if that actually happens and what it does to EV sales. My prediction is that it will be, you know, maybe wishful thinking, but my prediction is that Trump will not be successful in doing major damage to the IRA. I don't think he will repeal the EV tax credit in its entirety. I think that there's going to be way too much pressure on him and on Congress from the auto industry, which has benefited greatly from all this stuff and spent years investing in it. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from Republican lawmakers in areas like, it's like Kentucky or South Carolina, these places that are benefiting, or Georgia, places that are benefiting from these huge car and battery factories. I think it might not be pretty. We're definitely going to see a lot of change. We're definitely going to see changes to the EPA regulations around fuel economy and stuff like that. But I have a suspicion that some of the major, you know, kind of pillars of these policies will remain intact. What do you think about that? And what's your prediction? What are you looking at?
Yeah, I think he feels like he's coming in. He's like, we're going to bring back oil and gas. Yeah, this is the drill baby, drill guy. It's like, we're going to bring back gas cars. But that's just globally not where the market's going. I mean, it's going towards hybrids. It's going towards electrification. It's going towards full EVs. And like, this country's industry can either be part of that or it can be left behind and become makers of farm equipment. But my prediction, like, honestly, I'm keeping my eyes on China this year because I have a feeling, and I mentioned this in the last episode too, that like Trump will cut some sort of trade deal with China. And as part of that, it will allow Chinese automakers some kind of access in the United States. Maybe it's goes so far as like a factory here in the US, maybe it's imports, maybe it's more like joint ventures and partnerships with Ford or GM or whatever to bring that technology to the US. But like, I think that, you know, despite being like, you know, describing himself as kind of a China hawk, you know, the guy loves a deal and he's gonna, there could be some deal he cuts with their government or their industry to, you know, get things moving in that direction over here. Whether that happens at, you know, the expense of our automakers is really gonna be worth watching. Cause like you kill the EV tax credits in America, you slow down EV sales, Ford, GM and the rest kind of back off a bit. And then all of a sudden, like, now they got to fight BYD, XPENG, NIO or whatever that are making cars in, I don't know, Ohio or Michigan or something, Alabama. Like, that's going to be a really interesting story to watch. So like, it's a new government coming in, but like a very unpredictable one. So that could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say something we probably should have mentioned earlier and that I'll mention now is like, this was the year of tariffs. This was the year that, you know, the Biden presidency was kind of marked by a really hard stance against these Chinese car companies and saying, look, we're going to put 100% tariffs on you. We're going to tariff EV batteries. Europe did the same thing with tariffs in the EU. So we could see a big reversal. You're right. Maybe we'll see the deal maker make a deal here. But 2024 was when China not only put the auto world on notice, but also the rest of the world said, you know, not so fast. We're not going to just let you in here willy nilly.
We're going to be busy next year, Tim. Get some rest while you can, man.
Definitely.
Well, that's been us for 2024. Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back Friday with a new episode. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. It really helps us out. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on your favorite social media platform or check out InsideEVs.com for all of our latest EV coverage. See you next time.
Thanks for listening and Happy New Year.